Team South is the name of a new adventure involving round-the-world yachtsman Damien Foxhole and marine biologists Lucy Hunt and Niall McAllister. They plan to lead low-impact sailing expeditions in Antarctica from December until next March, when the bicentenary of the continent's charting by Corkman Edward Bransfield will also be celebrated. Lorna Siggins has been meeting them.
There's little or nothing that Kerry-born professional sailor Damien Foxhole doesn't know about global circumnavigation. He's been involved in 10 round-the-world races, an event he has also won, and he has experienced the worst that the Southern Ocean can offer. Now he hopes to experience the best, because from December the 1st, he'll be leading expeditions to Antarctica with his wife and marine biologist Lucy Hunt, founder of the Sea Synergy Centre in Waterville, County Kerry, and West Cork-based marine biologist Niall McAllister. The trio will be sailing a 65-foot Ketch ocean tramp owned by Quixote Expeditions, which has an ethos of community collaboration, education and research, and minimal footprint. They're looking for adventurous people who might like to join them on the two-week voyages, when they will also mark two centuries since Corkman Edward Bransfield recorded the Antarctic continent for the first time. I spoke to Damien and Lucy recently, and they told me what it's all about.
Hi, Damien Foxhole. I'm from Southwest Kerry. I've spent my life on and in the water. This year, 2019, I'm heading into my 11th round the world event, 7th ocean race. Of course, remember the ocean race from the couple of editions that we've had into Galway in Ireland. I was lucky enough to win the ocean race a few editions ago, and with the race ending in Galway. So that was really, for me, I think, one of the highlights of my whole marine career. Through those events, I've spent a lot of time, probably more than most people, in the Southern Ocean, seen many more icebergs than I would like to have seen. Indeed, even in the North Atlantic, as sometimes we sail past Labrador and Newfoundland through Cape Race area. But I've never seen the southern continent, and of course, being from Southwest Kerry, you know, I suppose there's a kind of a draw to it. The opportunity came up early this year to run a boat to Antarctica. There's about 15 boats to sail and take guests and scientists and amateur and some professional adventurers to the southern continent. And we've been asked to run this boat. I've put together a full Irish crew with Niall McAllister from West Cork Sailing and Lucy Hunt from Sea Synergy. And we're going to be leaving on the 1st of December with our first group from Ushuaia in Patagonia to spend 2 weeks sailing around Antarctica with the first group. And then we reenact that, basically. We repeat that 6 times before we finish the season by sailing back out to the Falklands. And as we started setting up for this season, and something totally new for all of us, we became aware that actually Antarctica was charted for the very first time by a Munster man. Amazing, really. And so we dug into the story a little bit. Jim Wilson, who is, I would say, kind of one of the leading Irish Antarctic experts, has been very helpful sharing his advice with us and sharing this amazing story of Edward Bransfield.
Hello, I'm Lucy Hunt, and I'm a marine biologist from Southwest Kerry. I've grown up in Waterville in the Smugglers Inn overlooking the beach, and the seashore and the sea has always been my playground, but now I'm very happy to say it's my workplace as well. And I founded Sea Synergy Marine Awareness Education and Research Centre in 2014. And we've been working with Irish Whale and Dolphin Group on expeditions going offshore looking for whales and dolphins. And I would have worked with Niall McAllister from West Cork Sailing through those expeditions offshore as well. And I have to say, it's probably some of my happiest times when I'm offshore sailing and helping other people discover the wonders of the ocean, looking for whales and dolphins, and just enjoying the ocean and what it offers. I also work with the Ocean Race as their education advisor, and that's bringing to life the importance of the ocean and how we need to look after the ocean as well. So that's an international education program that we run, and we operate in 42 different countries now. It's being used in around the world. So it's an amazing opportunity to work in Antarctica now and see the last continent, I suppose, or the hidden continent, and get down there with a fantastic crew of Damien Foxall and Niall McAllister, and to see what we can find down there as well, between the marine mammals and just the amazing, spectacular scenery as well. So very much looking forward to that. I've worked in the Arctic previously, and I have seen a lot of icebergs, which just totally blew my mind. And just amazing to see. So I think, you know, if you have an opportunity to have this sort of adventure or a time where you can take some time to go and see these places, you have to do it as well.
It's like a once in a lifetime. It's an environment which is very dynamic in terms of how we have to operate the boat down there. There's 15 sailboats. There's a group of small cruise ships that share these experiences or offer these experiences. And so we have to be very careful how we choose our moorings, where we anchor up. There's one amazing place which is actually basically the caldera of this volcano is flooded, and you actually sail in, or you motor into this anchorage, and you're in the middle of a volcano with hot black sand in the middle of Antarctica. You know, the type of people who'd like to go walking up Carentu, well, they might be inspired by something a little bit higher, or people who are, do a bit of sailing and enjoy, discovering new places by boat. It's an opportunity which offers itself to a wide group of people. And so it's a 65-foot ketch sailboat. It's fitted out specifically for Antarctica. So it's ice standard and certified by Lloyds, etc. We take eight guests, so it's quite an exclusive experience, or it's a unique experience, I should say. And we offer typically, the company offers, Quixote Expeditions offer one guest spot for a scientist on board. So the scientist in some ways goes about his work, but it also sets the theme for that 2-week experience. So whether he's counting penguins or measuring icebergs or looking at plankton or whatever it is, bioluminescence, that's going on in the background. Basically we fly down to Ushuaia in Patagonia. There's a couple of days there, and then we take the first trip down and spend 2 weeks exploring Antarctica, and then it's a fly-in, fly-out experience. So the next group of guests will come down and fly into South Shetlands to replace, to start another 2-week experience. And the final trip, then we take our guests for the 2 weeks and we sail out of Antarctica to the Falkland Islands. So, I mean, I can't tell you how much we're all looking forward to this and to be able to share it with other people as well. And hopefully, it'd be nice to get a few Irish crew in the 200 years from Edward Bransfield reach out. In my mind, it's kind of like we're virtually reaching out across the two centuries to that moment when they first discovered it. Yeah.
That was Damien Foxall and Lucy Hunt, and the website for their expedition is quixoteexpeditions.com, Quixote. Something we've spoken about on the programme a number of times is the catch and release tagging programme for tuna off the Irish coasts. 15 charter angling skippers had been given licences to catch, tag and release bluefin tuna for the purposes of collecting data off the Irish coast. The pilot project has been very successful, with over 200 fish tagged and released to date. But due to migratory patterns of bluefin tuna, there's been little activity on the south and southwest. And as a result, the fishing season has been extended until 12th of November. After that, there'll be no further extensions because water temperatures drop and it could impact the survival chances of those fish. You still have 2 weeks to get out there. I was recently in Glandour in West Cork and took the opportunity to visit a shed in a remote area well off the beaten track. There, a boat is being lovingly rebuilt. She's more than 100 years old, the Lady Min, and she's owned by the O'Keefe family.
I'm Simon O'Keefe. I'm the great-grandson of the builder of Lady Min.
Lady Mayne, it's here in a shed in West Cork. Tell me something about her.
She is a 30-foot gaff cutter, built probably to a Herreshoff design in Drina Traw, near Skull, and launched in 1902.
How did you come to her? She's here now. She's been taken apart and she's now being put back together.
Well, the history that I know was that my great-grandfather put up for sale in September 1902, but apparently didn't sell her. And the next information I have is that a guy called Jack Driscoll bought her in Castle Townsend in 1944 with a concrete keel on because they'd sold the lead for the war effort.
Okay.
And Jack kept her for many years. I think he was the shipwright to the naval service in Hall Bolan. And he kept her in Ringaskiddy, and she's very famous in Royal Cork circles as a raider. She's extremely fast downwind, even against modern boats. So
during those years, it was raced. It wasn't a working boat.
No, not a working boat. She was raced and raced very successfully. There isn't a single cup between here and Yall that doesn't have her name on it. So she's a good fast boat.
What happened to her next?
So a guy called Dermot O'Donoghue eventually bought her, and he sailed her for a number of years in Glendore. And at some stage, he wanted to sell her, and my uncle Frank, Dad's brother, suggested to me that we should look into it, and I did. And over time, I sort of argued with Dermot, and eventually he sold her to me. And I did absolutely nothing with her for about 10 years.
So she sat in a shed, or even a shed?
Anyway, eventually then I said, look, Tiernan came to me and said, I talked about four or five boat builders, and Tiernan was the one who sort of stuck with it. And he at some point said, look, Simon, the metal trolley that she's on is disintegrating quite quickly, and we need to do something so that she doesn't fall over. And so we got into a conversation, and we sort of said, well, you know, could we do it this way or that way? And we got into a discussion about money that worked out well and said, look, why don't we just give it a go and see how it works out? I talked to other members of the family. We had a couple of surveys done.
You confessed.
I confessed. Yes, exactly. Let the cat out of the bag. But the surveys showed that she was in very good condition for a boat of 115 years. And so we said, look, why don't we just start building? Let's just go to work on it. And then
how long ago was that?
That was in, I think, about 2016. And then I got a small check from my sister. And then Stephen started to help me, and then Dad, and then Mum. And so it's slowly built up. It's become sort of, it's gained credibility, I suppose, as time has gone by. And so now we're looking down the home straight now.
Okay, so we're here now in the shed in Glendore. It's actually surprisingly low down. Is the keel taken off?
The keel's off her. There's about a further, I think she draws about 3.5 foot.
Okay, so which would put her right up over our heads?
Well up over our heads. Yeah. When she was on the trolley before, she's above my eye level, and I'm fairly tall.
Okay, so what have you done so far? Now, it's here, it's a hull, the frame of the deck, but you've taken everything else off.
Yeah. What we had done was we got a guy called Pat Tanner to do a digital survey of the boat. So he came down with all this gear, and he can show you individual nails on the... He's got such a detailed survey of her. So we knew what we were trying to rebuild, and we knew that she was hogged fore and aft, so we knew what corrections had to be made. Hogged meant that she was sagging, basically, on her keel. So Tiernan took all that on board and worked the hog back out of her and just basically took her apart. So at one stage, there were essentially no planks on her, no on the side. There was just ribs.
Okay, so you took every plank off, and one of these is practically impossible to replace.
They're difficult to replace because they're all between about 33, 36 foot long, I think. And Tiernan's very picky about this. It has less than one knot per meter in the wood, and trying to get planks that long nowadays is very difficult. So we preserved every one that we could, and Tiernan scarfed in. You can barely see that there are different bits of wood in there, but they are. I have to say now, I'm not the wood technical person or anything like that. He's the expert on all this.
So this, you've got frames. Did you have to replace many of the frames?
Yeah, they're all
the ribs,
new.
Should I say?
The ribs. No, all the ribs are new. We took a decision on that. You wouldn't be able to insure the boat if you were saying, well, this one isn't, this one isn't. Okay. So they've all been taken out and they're made new here, steamed and everything, and back in place. And then came the planking.
How far on are you? How far more before you get her back in the water?
In simple project management terms, the hull is complete. Next big job is to put the deck on. The next big job after that is to put the cockpit in and a very small cabin. We're going to make this a Roaring Water Bay day sailor, so plenty of cabin, plenty of cockpit space and, you know, to sit in.
Yeah, you'd probably be able to spend a night at a stretch.
At a stretch. There's sufficient accommodation for two bunks and something to put sails on, that sort of thing.
Do you have the mast?
No, the mast is over there, but it's got rot. So Tiernan's going to make a new, bigger, better, stronger one that will be hollow. So a more modern approach to mast making, but it's going to be a far more efficient and lighter mast.
We had a look at the rudder. It's a very big thing. It looks like it'd be a killer to handle. You'd have two or three hands on it.
Yeah, we've been looking at that and decided that the key thing, because it's a rudder attached to the keel, as opposed to an independent blade, we are going to keep it as big as we possibly can, on the basis that it's going to be easier to take a piece off it if we need to then to add a piece to it.
Yeah, because you'd imagine in a big wind you'd be hanging on to it.
Yeah, she's going to... Well, I'll tell you something now. She's 30 foot long, and the boom is 30 foot long. So there's about 6 foot of main boom hangs out over the transom. So she carries an enormous amount of sail for the size of boat. It's low aspect, but huge amount of sail.
What motivates somebody to get into an insane project like this?
Sheer pigheadedness, I think. You know, when enough people say, oh, that can't be done... Yeah, you know, listen, it can be done.
But it's your family history.
Yeah, there's my great grandfather appears to be a hell of a man. I know that he was an RIC man in Limerick. He came down to Skull. He married a lady. Tragically, she died in childbirth with twins, and he married a second lady called Mary Lyons, known as Minnie Lyons. So that's why this boat is called Lady Min. And she had a business in Bantry and he had a business in Skull. The story is that they both kept running their own separate businesses and managed to have a family of 10. And now there's, you know, families in Skull and Skibbereen and as far as Kinsale that are all O'Keefe direct descendants.
What's the plan for her launching?
Plan for launch is that we get her on the water in May next year. We want to be a little bit cautious and make sure that we do all the sea trials right and get everything sorted out that way. And then we're going to take her to the Royal Cork 300 celebrations. There's some interest in that. The next thing after that is Glandore and the classic boats. And then the culmination of the season should be Cowes Week and Skull Regatta.
I'm Tiernan Rowe of Rowboats.
Tell me something about rowboats. A very well-known name in West Cork, in boat building, really throughout the country.
Well, I started in 2009. I'm out my own, under my own name, and I suppose I've been messing around and building boats since I built an Optimist with my father when I was about 10. So on and off since then, I've been fixing and repairing boats. I started in Mullingar, an unlikely place, I know, but a lot of lakes there, a lot of sailing. And I moved to West Cork, 99, 20 years here now, so I'm from West Cork, I suppose, I don't know.
What kind of things have you built?
Well, I started, the first boat I built was probably my favourite. It was a motorboat designed by William Aitken, a famous American designer. And I built a couple of sailing boats in between, some boats for TV and film, for Game of Thrones and that kind of thing. And
what you build for Game of Thrones?
A pair of identical boats that they wanted to burn.
Okay. So great money on that.
Well, not bad, not bad, yeah.
Now, this is a really big project here, rebuilding the Lady Min. Tell me something about the work you've done so far.
Well, as Simon said, I have pretty much rebuilt her. We started taking off the old deck. I recently found out it was a recycled deck, but that was easy to get off because it came off in my hands. I could just dig it out. It was quite rotten. And then I reframed her with steamed frames.
Well, so each of those, you cut out the wood and then bent it by using steam?
Yeah, so you heat it up in the steam. They're about an inch thick, so it took about an hour or so to get them soft and pliable. I whip them out of the steam box, jump inside the boat and bend them in. So I've done it all on my own, so it was a bit of rushing that day.
Yeah, because doing each one of those ribs now, it's a skill which would be beyond most people. How long does each one of those take and how many are there?
There's 37 frames or sets of frames, and each one takes an hour to steam, and maybe you'd want to have it in place in 10 or 15 minutes. So I don't know what that works out to.
So then when you're keeping these together, are they nails? Are they nailed in or
it's
what are they?
Copper nails with roves. So each one is nailed in, and then you peen on a rove and with a small ball
peen hammer. White copper.
You peen down the copper so it expands like a little mushroom over the rove, which is like a little washer kind of thing, and that holds the two pieces of wood together.
Why copper?
Because it is pretty much inert, so it doesn't corrode in salt water. It does work hard and over time, but that takes a long time usually. If you can keep it tight, it won't work.
Simon mentioned to us about the planks, each of them over 30 feet long, and they have to be a specific quality.
They do, yeah. She's planked in a Canadian red pine, and I did a lot of research. Canadian red pine isn't really commercially available outside the east coast or eastern part of Canada. And further research, I found that they have a lot of trouble. They have, when they're doing antique identification in Canada, they find it very hard to differentiate between vernacular Canadian furniture that's made with red pine and imported European stuff made with Scots pine, or red deal as we call it here. So I was able to source some very good quality Scandinavian red deal, and that's what I used to replanker. It's not red, but it's pretty damn close to what was there.
What do you mean by good quality? What's the difference between good quality and bad quality?
The good quality, this stuff is if you have Irish or English or Scottish red deal, is grown a little too fast. It's good for oak. Irish oak is excellent because it's grown fast, it's very flexible, but for the softwoods it's not so good. So the Baltic stuff grows very slowly, and the growth rings are tightly packed together, so you have the hard late growth, the slow growth in the late part of the season that makes it stronger.
And a specific number of knots per meter?
Yeah, there's if you can get it a knot per meter, a little bit less or thereabouts. So I've got very good stuff, you know, because I was able to pick through large amounts of the timber. So,
did you have to go abroad to find it?
No, I was able to get it locally, and that was part of the attraction, that it was I could get it locally and it would keep costs down and environmental footprint down and all of that, you know. So,
do you mind if we just take a look up here and tell me then when we look in? When we look inside, if we stand up here on your little scaffolding, what are we looking at?
Well, inside is the frames as described, and then I had to. She was floored, which are large timbers that cross the keel. They're used to connect the planking to the keel and hold the keel bolts in the area of the ballast keel. They were they had been cut down in the most crucial part over the keel to increase headroom in the cabin, I think. And they actually were a bit too flexible. So these are all new floors I've made, and they're a little bit stiffer.
How will she handle, do you think?
I'd say she'd be a little flyer.
How long have you been working on her?
It's about 18 months now, on and off. Not every day, just whenever I can. And that's about 18 months. And it seemed 2020 seemed a long time ago when I started, and now it's only 6 months away, so I'm starting to fret.
And we hope to get out on the Lady Min when she's relaunched next summer.